Well, it's Wednesday, so it's time for our weekly check on the world of sports. And for that, we're joined today by Radio Boston's own Chris Sitterick. Chris, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me, Deb.
So let's start with the bad news. What happened with the Patriots getting crushed by Tennessee on Sunday?
Yeah, that was a pretty brutal game. They looked pretty bad in all three phases of the game, offense, defense, and special teams. Particularly staggering to me was how bad and how out of sorts the offense looked. They only scored 10 points the entire game. This is an offense that came into the game fourth in the league, averaging about 30 points a game. So that's a real deficiency there. There was also a real just kind of lack of energy that seemed to be across the whole team, and that contributed to how they fell behind early. And you could see that lack of energy really right from the opening play. Titans receiver Darius Jennings took the opening kickoff 58 yards to start the game.
Gostkowski to kick it off. We're underway in Nashville. Jennings, return man, has a touchdown this year on a kickoff return. Jennings finds an angle. Jennings foot race to the perimeter. Tremendous return to open up. Chased by.
So Jennings takes it into Patriots territory. It's a tough way to start the game. Devin McCourty, who finally chased him down, said basically that sucked the energy out of the team, and it was all uphill battle from there. There were also some real personal interests in this. There were a couple of spurned Patriots players on the Titans team. Deion Lewis, the running back, Malcolm Butler, the cornerback, and even the coach Mike Vrabel is not necessarily spurned, but he's a former Patriots player. And I think those guys always have a little bit of extra edge when they come up against Belichick.
So is this just a bump in the road, Chris?
I think so. There are some who are saying that it's a sign of some bigger problems for this team. There was a lot of chaos in the offseason, a lot of kind of swirling palace intrigue. I caught a little bit of Deion Sanders talking on NFL Network about how he thinks the Patriots have a hard time playing from behind. I find that a little hard to believe. Tom Brady is Mr. 28-3, after all. He's the king of comebacks. But he actually, Brady, seemed to echo that sentiment talking to reporters after the game.
Give them a lot of credit. They made a lot of plays, kind of played from ahead. You know, it was right where they wanted to be. We just couldn't do enough early offensively to put any pressure on them, and there was really no pressure on them all day.
And that's really been a trend for the Patriots on the road, especially this year. They're 2-3 on the road, which is not good. Tennessee scored 17 points in the first quarter. Jacksonville back in week two scored 14 unanswered points to open the game. And the Patriots only scored 3 points in the entire first half against the Lions in Detroit in week three. So 2-3 on the road, not good. And one of those wins is Buffalo. And I think, Deb, even you know, the Bills, not a good team. So that's a little bit of an asterisk there.
Well, let's just go back to Brady for a moment. I mean, does this lack of energy in this game, you know, everyone's looking, you know, are these signs that Brady's finally maybe past his prime?
I'd be more willing to give you that if we hadn't been asking that question the last 5 years or so. He is 41 years old. Eventually, he's going to hit the wall. I don't think this is necessarily it. He looked bad on Sunday. I will give you that. He didn't throw for any touchdowns, but he was sacked 3 times. He was hit 6 times. Brady has consistently over his career been a guy, when he is pressured, when he's feeling the defense around him, he kind of starts to bob and weave a little bit. He gets the happy feet. He kind of loses that focus a little bit, as most quarterbacks do. If you got 300-pound guys rushing at you, it's hard to kind of stay focused on your receivers. So I would write it off as just a bad game. This team has been there too many times before.
Okay, let's turn to another team that's had some struggles this season, Celtics. I know people were excited for this year. How do you
think? Yeah, me too.
How do you think this season's been going so far?
A bit of a mixed bag, unfortunately. They're 7-6 to start the year. Everybody kind of assumed they were going to run away with the Eastern Conference. Right now, they're fifth in the standings. The big change here from last year, you've got Gordon Hayward, who's back from that absolutely horrible leg injury that happened in game one of the season last year. And so because he's back, he's a prominent player. He's taking a lot of minutes and a lot of touches. You've got the young guys who had stepped up last year, now seeing their roles diminished a little bit. Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum. And I think there's a little bit of a feeling out period going on right now. Also, this is a team that came into the season, as I said, with really high expectations. When you've got a young core, I think that can mess with your mind a little bit.
And so, you know, last year the Celtics had so much success. I mean, what do you think's going on here? Why haven't they lived up to, you know, sort of rode that wave all the way into this season?
Yeah, it's a little bit of growing pains, which I guess is not that uncommon with young guys. As I said, this is a young core that is really starting to try to figure each other out with the addition of Gordon Hayward. Kyrie Irving, who's been maybe the most consistent lone bright spot for this team this year, he says that a lot of the problems they've been having really comes down to attitude.
We're not as good as we think we are. That's really what it comes down to. I think I said in the beginning of the season, the excitement is just done. You know, it's real basketball now, so it's not just about the potential of the team or where we'll be at the end of the season.
So some pretty strong words there. We're not as good as we think we are. He's obviously trying to send a message to his teammates. You know, compare this team to last year's team. Last year, once Gordon Hayward goes down in game one, all expectations kind of out the window. The pressure's off. So the team starts 0-2 and then wins 16 in a row. This year they come in, they're a heavy favorite in the East, and now they're 7-6, really kind of struggling to get that cohesion.
Okay, well, let's try to do a positive story here. How about those Red Sox, World Series champs? You have some good news about the Red Sox.
You're killing me, Deb, because here I am once again raining on your parade a little bit. Alex Cora was in the running for American League Manager of the Year. You would think 108 wins, most in Red Sox franchise history. He had it in the bag. That award was given instead to Bob Melvin, who's the manager of the Oakland Athletics.
So just for a minute, say you were not from New England. Was this the right call?
I think you can make a case either way here. It's an interesting question. First of all, the postseason doesn't count. This is an award they vote on at the end of the regular season. And I think if you were able to look at all of those amazing postseason decisions that Cora made, then he would absolutely have walked away with this thing. There's also an expectations here. The Red Sox were supposed to be one of the best teams in the league, if not the best team. The Oakland Athletics weren't even necessarily supposed to make the playoffs. You look at payroll. The Oakland A's, $66 million for their entire payroll. The Red Sox come in at $234 million. Mm. So a huge discrepancy there. And this tends to be an award that goes to small market teams with kind of that lower budget.
Yeah, we didn't need that award anyway.
That's right. We got the important trophy. That's the one that makes us home here.
Well, I'm not going to let you leave until you do give us something really positive here that we can smile about.
That's fair enough. And so I do have something for you, actually. Okay. So I want to take a moment here to appreciate Willie O'Ree. He's a former Boston Bruin. He became the first black player in the NHL when he entered a game in Montreal on January 18th, 1958. He was actually a guest on Radio Boston. He spoke with Meghna Chakrabarty back in 2016 when he was featured in a film called Soul on Ice, Past, Present, and Future. And just listen to how he described the actual game where he broke the color barrier.
So when I come up and stepped on the ice, on January the 18th, there was no big recognition. Nobody said, there's Willie O'Ree. He broke the color barrier. And it really didn't realize with me until the next day I read it in the paper.
What do you think?
Well,
guys?
I felt good. But, my main concern was to just play a good game and help the Bruins win.
So pretty crazy. He's breaking the color barrier, doesn't even realize it, just wants his team to win. But that was pretty indicative of the type of player that Willie O'Ree was. He officially was inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame on Monday. So congrats to Willie O'Ree and his family.
Okay, Radio Boston's Chris Siderick. Chris, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Deb.
Stay with us. Coming up, the fight over recreational marijuana in Brookline. We'll take your calls. I'm Deborah Becker. This is Radio Boston.